Peter Welch, what do you make of the fact that the Republican governors of so many states, including your next door neighbor, Massachusetts, have been basically in your corner when it comes to not repealing and replacing Obamacare?
Well, it's very telling. And by the way, Governor Scott of Vermont is on the same page with Governor Baker of Massachusetts. You know, the governors have real world responsibilities. It's not just rhetoric, because at the end of the day, they take quite seriously the health care access that the citizens in their state have. And they also are extremely concerned, as a governor has to be, about the budget. And both Governor Scott and Governor Baker, in a bipartisan group of governors, said, hey, wait a minute, what you're talking about with this repeal will be devastating to our citizens. They'll lose health care, and it'll be brutal on our budgets. You know, in Vermont, it could be $500 million that we lose. So it's no surprise to me that governors who look under the hood of this legislation and have to deal with the consequences say, wait a minute, Congress, you guys are going off the rails. You know, in the members of Congress, it goes back to what I said about Senator Grassley, where he said, hey, we made a promise and it may be dumb, but we're going to keep it. Well, that's not the way to do public policy.
No,
it's not. First, we shouldn't make stupid promises in the beginning. But second, our job is to try to have policies here in Washington that help the states and help people back home have a better shot at being successful in their own lives. And that's got to be the guiding goal. We can have debates about how to do it. But bottom line, our responsibility is to serve the states and the people from those states that we represent.
So when you talk to your colleagues, the Republican colleagues in the House, you know, I know you do, and there's a certain amount of confidentiality that goes with that. But do they indicate that they are as gung-ho about this repeal and replace as we would be led to believe?
It's really a debate. It's a real debate over there. For instance, a crack in that unified call to repeal was the effort that 20 Republicans and 20 Democrats had. I was part of that. Tom Reed from upstate New York was a big part of that. Tom Suozzi from Long Island, big part of that. But it was to acknowledge that the individual market, it's a part of the Affordable Care Act that affects about 7 to 9% of Vermonters, New Yorkers, and Americans, was broken. And we came up with very specific, concrete proposals to fix it. So it was the first time you had Republicans acknowledging that it wasn't all about repeal. There, in fact, were some good things in the Affordable Care Act, especially the insurance reforms about pre-existing conditions and no lifetime caps and our kids staying on our policy until they're age 26. But you also had Democrats like me who supported the Affordable Care Act saying, hey, there's parts of it that are broken. They need to be fixed. So that was very, very significant, and it indicates movement both on the Republican and Democratic side, where instead of having it be an all-or-nothing repeal situation, we're acknowledging that the real challenge here is to get affordability in health care under control. It's too expensive. Well, that's the big challenge. You know, a lot of times Democrats emphasize access to health care, and that's crucial, and Republicans oftentimes emphasize the cost, but that's crucial. And the fact is, we should be spending all of our time looking at ways to improve how we deliver health care, how the market is broken in many cases, and then make an effort to bring those costs down to make it more affordable. What we can't do is have an approach where the way we try to control cost in health care is to take health care away from people who need it. That's essentially what would happen with the Trump repeal proposal.
In the meantime, your predecessor in the House and member of the United States Senate, Bernie Sanders, who we've talked to many times, comes out with something that many of us are for, Medicare for all, universal health care coverage. How's that being received?
But he got a good a number of sponsors in the Senate. I support it, and a number of House members support it. The Medicare for All approach, I think, is the goal that we should have, where we want to have a health care system where everybody's covered and everybody helps pay. That's not going to go anywhere in this Congress. I mean, we're in an existential fight here to maintain the benefits of the Affordable Care Act and then try to improve them. So Bernie's proposal has an enormous amount of merit as a long-term goal. Our country wants to be like other countries when it comes to having a much more affordable health care system that covers all our citizens. And in our country, that's been a long-term aspiration ever since Harry Truman was president. And we had two solid steps towards achieving that goal. One was Medicare and Medicaid in 1965 under LBJ, and the other was the Affordable Care Act in 2010 under President Obama. Right now, we've got to defend that. But long-term, let's keep the march towards trying to achieve that universal access to care. And by the way, one of the reasons we should be doing that is if we get a better health care system, we can bring the cost down. I mean, we pay about 18% of our gross domestic product for health care. And that's, by and large, double what other countries like France or Canada or Great Britain pay. And we can have arguments about the merits and demerits of everybody's health care system. But by and large, there's a consensus view among all who assess everything that access is better, is certainly better in other countries. Outcomes are good, and the costs are more sustainable and much less than here. So that's where we should be trying to work together. How do we bring our costs down?
But does that have to do with the insurance companies and that they get to take a part of every piece of business that's done?
That's part of it, but there's other things. Pharmaceuticals. We're one of the two countries in the world where the government doesn't negotiate bulk price discounts in buying pharmaceuticals. We pay by far the highest pharmacy cost, prescription drug cost in the country. It's also a function of broken markets. There's just an immense amount of pricing power in a lot of the providers in healthcare. Now, it really varies, because a lot of our family physicians, the people that we really rely on that have the most direct and immediate contact with patients over the course of their lifetime, their reimbursement is a lot less than the specialist. So there's really a lot of reasons in here where our prices are just the highest. The other, though, is that when you have a fee-for-service system, it's like time and materials. Let's say you're building a house, and your deal with the contractor is, I want this kind of house, and however much time and however much you spend on materials, that's what I'll pay you. Well, you have no control over it. And most of us wouldn't enter into that kind of arrangement where we just say, whatever you spend is what I'll pay. And that's kind of how we approach it in healthcare. So there's enormous evidence about how we have in this country, on the one hand, very, very good care, but on the other hand, very expensive care, and oftentimes related to excessive utilization, which is bad for the bottom line of the taxpayer or the payer. But it also, excessive utilization oftentimes has bad health outcomes.
Peter, I only have 2 minutes left here. I wanted to ask you very quickly, you held a town hall in New Hampshire. Now, you're the congressman from Vermont. What was going on there?
Well, two things. I mean, Vermont and New Hampshire, of course, share the border of the Connecticut River. So a lot of the people, we did this over at the Ray School, which is a bi-state school district. In fact, some of my kids went to school in New Hampshire in a district. It was the last act that President Kennedy signed before he was assassinated. It enabled New Hampshire and Vermont to have a bi-state school district. And second, I did it with my colleague from New Hampshire, Annie Custer. So, in fact, she has a lot of people who are living in New Hampshire that work in Vermont, and the same is true for me. And it was a nice way for the two of us to show that we're going to work together for that Upper Valley region where we both have people that live in one state and work in the other. And we had a great meeting. The president of Dartmouth came. It was nice to see him. And a lot of local citizens came from both sides of the border.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, it's great that you did it, and it's great she did it. It could be, I'm sorry for this, it could be Custer's last stand. Forget it. Okay, thank you. That was charitable.
No, she's good. She'll win. She can make that last stand.
Of course she will, and I'm so sorry for it. I just had no other way to go. Listen, we have to cut it off at this stage. When we come back the next time, I want to go to North Korea, okay?
Yes, great.